Welcome to Base by Base, the papercast that brings genomics to you wherever you are. Imagine if we could truly revitalize our cells, give them a burst of fresh energy to fight off disease, maybe even slow down aging. What if the actual powerhouses of our cells, our mitochondria, could be used as like a therapeutic tool?
Yeah, it sounds almost like science fiction, doesn't it? But the thing is, mitochondrial dysfunction, it really lies at the heart of so many serious health problems we're facing. Think about, you know, devastating neurodegenerative conditions like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, or even debilitating cardiovascular diseases. In all of these, the cell's ability to generate the energy they need is, well, it's critically compromised.
Exactly. So this deep dive asks, what if we could give these struggling, damaged cells a whole fresh supply of functional mitochondria? How could that fundamentally change our approach to treating this really wide spectrum of debilitating conditions? It's a concept that's genuinely generating immense excitement, and today we're diving into how cutting-edge biotechnology is turning this incredible potential into something more tangible. Today, we're celebrating the groundbreaking work of Gopan Bersinkubat, Pasquale Piccone, Erkan Tunke, Leila Arian, Antonella Cugenti, Laura Palumbo, Ibrahim Turkel, Firat Akat, Keshav K. Singh, and Domenico Nusso. Their really insightful perspective article, which has significantly pushed our understanding of the biotechnological approaches and therapeutic potential of mitochondria transfer and transplantation, was recently published in Nature Communications. Okay, so to really set the stage here, let's quickly unpack the starring role of mitochondria. These tiny organelles are famously called the power plants of the cell, right? And for good reason, they're absolutely essential for producing energy, ATP, but their job doesn't stop there. They're also crucial for regulating programmed cell death, that's apoptosis, and just maintaining the overall balance and health of the cell.
And that's precisely why they're so central when things go wrong. When mitochondria aren't working properly, maybe they can't make ATP effectively, or they can't maintain that delicate ionic balance cells need, you know, homeostasis. That's when serious problems kick in. This dysfunction, it's strongly linked to a truly wide range of diseases and stress conditions. I mean, everything from cardiovascular disease, neurodegenerative disorders, retinal diseases, joint conditions, hearing loss, even acute respiratory distress syndrome. It's kind of foundational.
Right. So if faulty mitochondria are the root cause for so many things, then mitochondria transfer and transplantation, or MTT, well, it's emerging as a pretty compelling targeted solution. Preclinical studies are already showing some incredibly promising results. Introducing healthy functional mitochondria into damaged cells can significantly boost ATP production, help restore that crucial cellular balance, and improve cell survival, even under really stressful conditions. Essentially, MTT is a strategy to rescue struggling cells by giving them more and, you know, better performing energy factories. It's cellular revitalization, basically.
Mm-hmm. But the central challenge with MTT isn't just figuring out which cells are dysfunctional. It's how do you effectively deliver healthy, intact mitochondria to them? Mitochondria are surprisingly delicate structures, and your immune system, well, can recognize them as foreign if they're just injected raw, so to speak.
That makes total sense, yeah. And historically, scientists did observe natural ways cells already share mitochondria, didn't they? Like through things like gap junctions, which let small molecules pass, or microvesicles, these tiny packages that can carry mitochondria, and even those tunneling nanotubes, these dynamic structures that allow direct organelle exchange over longer distances. So cells kind of do this already.
They do. And while those natural methods are really fascinating, they just lack the precision and, frankly, the fine-tuning we need for actual therapeutic applications, especially at scale. That's where this idea of exogenous mitochondria administration comes in, directly introducing isolated mitochondria. Researchers had explored a few different delivery routes. For instance, systemic injection into the bloodstream. Sounds straightforward, maybe. But it often leads to non-specific distribution. They go everywhere, and it can trigger unwanted immune reactions. Then there's direct injection, you know, into specific organs like the brain or heart. That's more localized, but of course, it's invasive.
Yeah, it's more invasive.
Yeah. We also see intranasal delivery, which is non-invasive and actually shows promise for neurodegenerative disorders because it seems it can bypass that tricky blood-brain barrier. And oral administration is being looked at, but that's still quite a hurdle given how tough the digestive system is. Mitochondrial stability is a real issue there.
Okay, so clearly these sort of traditional or more direct methods have their drawbacks. This is where the really exciting stuff is happening. In biotechnology, right? Researchers are developing these incredibly clever ways to enhance mitochondrial protection, improve the targeting, make sure they're biocompatible. So what are some of these cutting-edge strategies?
Exactly. These biotech advances are designed to dramatically improve the specificity, efficiency, and, crucially, the safety of mitochondrial delivery, all while minimizing toxicity and immune activation. The ultimate goal here is to pave the way for treatments that are not only effective, but also, you know, scalable and commercially viable for broad use.
And the perspective article we're diving into, it highlights several of these promising biotechnological strategies, really focusing on enhancing targeting and protection. It's like giving these little powerhouses a better travel plan and some body armor.
That's a good way to put it. One of the main approaches involves modifying the mitochondrial surface. Think of it like giving them a special coating. A key technique here uses what are called cell-penetrating peptides, or CPPs. For example, researchers used a peptide called PEP1 to label mitochondria. They call this PMD, PEP1-mediated delivery. And in one study, using cells relevant to Parkinson's research, this PMD resulted in a pretty remarkable 60.5% transfer efficiency. Compare that to just 14.5% with unmodified or naked mitochondria.
Wow, 60.5 versus 14.5, that's a huge leap in efficiency. It really underlines how critical that delivery system, that coating actually is. What other surface modifications are making a similar kind of impact?
Well, another clever approach combines dextrin, DEX, and triphenylphosphonium, TPP. TPP is lipophilic, which basically helps mitochondria slip inside cells more easily. And DEX, that's a polysaccharide, seems to improve their overall uptake. This particular coating actually reduced the mitochondria's negative charge, making them sort of more attractive to cell membranes. Studies showed roughly a threefold increase in internalization in breast cancer and cardiac cells, plus a welcome reduction in harmful reactive oxygen species, those damaging byproducts of cell stress.
Okay, so we've boosted how well cells take them up. The next big challenge is getting them precisely where they're needed, right? How are researchers tackling targeted delivery to specific injured tissues?
Yeah, that's key. For conditions like myocardial ischemia or reperfusion injury, that's heart damage after blood flow returns, post-blockage researchers used a specific PEP peptide linked with TPP. This allowed for targeted intravenous delivery. And what's fascinating here is, while naked mitochondria given intravenously showed absolutely no therapeutic effect, in fact, they even increased inflammation. These PEP-TPP-coated mitochondria significantly reduced cell death, inflammation, and the overall infarct size in animal models. That PP peptide essentially acts like a tiny GPS, guiding the mitochondria specifically to the ischemic heart tissue.
That's incredibly precise, like a guided missile for mitochondria. And given these impressive results with injections, it makes you wonder about broader use. Could we ever deliver these, say, orally, in a pill?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And surprisingly, there's a really novel approach using nanomotorized mitochondria, developed specifically for oral administration in ischemic heart disease models. Picture this. These mitochondria are coated with a nanomotor bit that actually responds to signals like nitric oxide and reactive oxygen species, signals of stress in damaged tissue. Then, they're further wrapped in fragments of heart cell membrane. It's quite ingenious. This design lets them survive the harsh stomach environment, enter the bloodstream through intestinal cells, and then be chemoattracted, chemically guided straight to the damaged heart tissue.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like tiny biological homing missiles.
Homing missiles.
Yeah, exactly. In mouse models, about 7.9% of these nanomotorized mitochondria reach the cardiac tissue. Now, that might not sound huge, but it's significantly higher than non-motorized versions. And crucially, they effectively prevented disease progression. It's like giving them their own tiny self-guided drone system.
That is truly mind-blowing stuff. Nanomotorized mitochondria. Okay, so beyond surface mods and nanomotors, what about using natural extracellular vesicles, or EVs? You mentioned cells release these tiny packages naturally.
They do, and it's a brilliant natural strategy that researchers are leveraging. EVs, including things like microvesicles, can encapsulate mitochondria, protecting them. They can maintain their function for up to 24 hours, even in really harsh environments, high calcium, oxidative stress, where free mitochondria would just fail. This dramatically improves the efficiency of MTT. For example, in one ischemic heart model, microvesicles were found to be 100 times more effective at restoring bioenergetic parameters compared to just isolated mitochondrial protein alone. EVs have even been shown to boost ATP in brain endothelial cells by a massive 200-fold. And they can transfer healthy mitochondria from supporting cells like astrocytes directly to neurons, mitigating damage.
Wow, 100 times more effective.
Yeah, and a huge advantage, especially for neurological applications, is that EVs can naturally cross the blood-brain barrier. So nature's own delivery system could potentially be repurposed for therapies.
Okay, so if nature's system is already pretty good, what are the advantages, or maybe the necessity, of actually engineering vesicles? Why not just stick with the natural ones?
That's a great question. That's where engineered vesicles come into play. The advantage is control. For instance, encapsulating mitochondria within structures like liposomes creates what they call artificial membrane-coated mitochondria, or AM mito. These engineered particles maintained mitochondrial protein integrity, membrane potential, ATP content, all the important stuff. In primary mouse neurons, AM mito showed about a twofold increase in internalization compared to naked mitochondria and offers significant neuroprotection against conditions like oxygen glucose deprivation, which mimics stroke. And in living organisms, they actually reduced the infarct volume after a stroke-like event. So the big plus here is meticulous control over the contents and potential better targeting.
Right, control. So protection during delivery, whether it's natural or engineered, seems absolutely critical for success.
It truly is. Another really fascinating example involves fusogenic mitochondrial capsules, or FMCs. Imagine tiny engineered delivery pods that don't just drop off their cargo, but actually fuse with the target cells, delivering the mitochondria directly inside.
Fuse with the cell. Wow.
Yeah. These liposome-based structures maintained mitochondrial stability over time. They effectively evaded the cell's waste disposal system, the lysosomes, and showed faster, more efficient uptake into chondrocytes. Those are cartilage cells. They even promoted cartilage regeneration in osteoarthritis models. There were even things like lung-targeted liposomes called LMRs, loaded with mitochondria and an antioxidant designed to preferentially go to lung tissue. That could be a strategy for something like acute respiratory distress syndrome.
Okay, and finally, what about using things like hydrogels and biocompatible polymers? How do they fit into this picture?
These materials act kind of like protective cocoons or scaffolds. They can encapsulate mitochondria, shielding them from environmental stress and also helping them spread out locally, enhancing their diffusion near the target area. Pleuronic F127 hydrogel, for instance, has this neat property of being liquid at cool temps, but turning into a gel at body temperature.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so it can be injected as a liquid carrying the mitochondria, and then it gels up in place, protecting them from transplantation-related damage. In animal models of that same heart injury, myocardial ischemia reperfusion, these hydrogel-encapsulated mitochondria significantly improve cardiac function and reduce the size of the damaged tissue. Other hydrogels, made from things like hyaluronic acid, methyl cellulose, or alginate, have shown similar protective benefits. They preserve mitochondrial function and keep them concentrated right at the injury site for longer, like a therapeutic patch, almost, but on a cellular level.
This is all really fascinating. The transformative potential here for treating mitochondrial disorders seems huge. But if we step back and look at the bigger picture, what does this all mean for, you know, future research and actually getting these therapies into the clinic?
Well, this whole field powerfully emphasizes the need to integrate mitochondrial biology with really the cutting edge of bioengineering, cell therapy, and nanotechnology. That's how we'll unlock MTT's full promise. However, despite all these really exciting advancements, there are still significant challenges we need to overcome.
You mentioned challenges earlier, like the immune response. Is that still a major hurdle?
Yes, it absolutely is. While some studies maybe optimistically report no major immune response, others clearly show that even one injection of isolated mitochondria can activate pro-inflammatory signals, suggesting they can act as immunostimulators. So this is a critical area needing more research. Strategies like pegylation, basically coating the mitochondria with polyethylene glycol, are being actively explored to try to make them stealthier to the immune system. Plus, sometimes the nanoparticles themselves, the delivery vehicles, can affect mitochondrial function in the target cells, potentially increasing susceptibility to disease. That's another important thing to watch.
Right. And getting these tiny powerhouses exactly to the right spot, that still sounds incredibly difficult, even with these newer technologies.
It is. Targeting and delivery efficiency remain a major hurdle. Even with the best current methods, often only a small fraction, sometimes as low as, say, 10% of injected mitochondria actually reach the target cells. And the transfer isn't always specific. Overcoming physiological barriers, especially that formidable blood-brain barrier for neurological disorders, is incredibly complex. The challenge isn't just getting them across, but making sure they don't just scatter everywhere without preferentially hitting the target. And we don't always fully understand the exact pathway they take across these barriers.
And looking ahead, if these therapies are ever going to become widespread, things like scalability and getting regulatory approval must be huge considerations, right?
Oh, absolutely. Manufacturing clinical-grade nanoparticles and mitochondrial preps is incredibly complex and expensive. It requires highly specialized equipment, rigorous quality control at every single step. And the regulatory pathway for these novel therapies, it's still evolving. Regulators demand extensive safety and efficacy data, which can be tough to maintain consistently across different batches, given the complexity. And, you know, the economic feasibility, the cost, needs careful assessment for broad accessibility, too.
So from your perspective as an expert, what are the absolute key areas where we really need to see significant improvement to push this field forward? Okay, I think, firstly, we need a much more detailed understanding of the actual mechanisms of mitochondrial integration and survival inside the recipient cells. Like, do they truly fuse into the host cell's mitochondrial network? How long do they actually stay functional and provide benefit? We don't fully know. Secondly, while biotechnology is clearly improving the delivery, we need more exhaustive analysis of how these modifications, the coatings, the nanomotors, the vesicles, affect the activity of the mitochondria themselves. Not just their structure or how many get into a cell, but are they still working properly once they're inside?
Right, getting deeper into the how they work once delivered and how long they last.
Precisely. And linked to that, long-term safety studies are often lacking. Most research focuses on short-term effects, understandably perhaps, but we need to know the effects on different organs and tissues over time. Would regular infusions be necessary for sustained benefits over months or years? That's a big question. Also, for therapies using those natural extracellular vesicles, we need clearer methods to distinguish the therapeutic effects of the transferred mitochondria from other potentially beneficial molecules that might be inside those vesicles too.
Right. Isolating the mitochondrial effect itself.
Exactly. Engineered vesicles, because you can control their contents much more precisely, might offer a clearer, more controlled path towards clinical translation in that respect.
It also sounds like there's a critical need for standardization and maybe thinking about cost effectiveness right from the start.
Yes, definitely. Standardizing protocols is key. And exploring if mitochondria from different tissue sources have varying therapeutic properties, that could be a game changer. It might allow us to create even more efficient engineered mitochondria tailored for specific conditions. And finally, a crucial, often overlooked factor is the actual cost of manufacturing and implementing these complex systems. A comprehensive cost-benefit analysis is absolutely essential if these therapies are ever going to achieve broad accessibility and make a real difference to patients globally.
Okay, so if you're listening and looking for the central insight from this deep dive, it's really this. Mitochondria transfer and transplantation is a rapidly advancing field. It offers immense hope for treating a whole host of diseases rooted in problems with cellular energy.
And by leveraging these innovative biotechnological approaches, the coatings, the vesicles, the hydrogels, researchers are making significant strides. They're overcoming the inherent challenges of delivering these delicate powerhouses, making this type of cellular intervention more targeted, more efficient, and hopefully safer than ever before.
This journey is really transforming from, you know, a basic scientific concept into a tangible potential for regenerative and personalized medicine. So the big question remains, what does this ultimately mean for conditions that currently lack effective treatments? And how much closer are we to seeing these therapies actually reach patients? This episode was based on an open access article under the CC BY 4.0 license. You can find a direct link to the paper and the license in our episode description. If you enjoyed this analysis, the best way to support Base by Base is to subscribe or follow in your favorite podcast app and leave us a 5-star rating. It only takes a few seconds, but makes a huge difference in helping others discover the show. Thanks for listening, and join us next time as we explore more science, Base by Base.